We are really cruising now, not cruising on Grand Avenue, but to the conclusion of chapter 2 of part 2 of Pope St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body. John Paul completes his treatment of the wedding work by providing a special spousal spirituality, reflecting deeply on the unique Old Testament books of Song of Songs and Tobit. Sooner or later, all couples experience dryness, discouragement, and sometimes even face divorce. Husband and wife feel like that couple at Cana in John chapter 2, who embarrassingly ran out of wine at their wedding. Symbolically speaking, that initial inebriation of married love, the wine of the honeymoon, gives way to the staid sobriety, the water of the honey-do list, the daily drudgery, emotional distance, bickering, and whose turn is it to wake up with a baby? By contrast, John Paul's analysis of Song of Songs and Tobit seeks to produce the opposite effect, to turn the water of lackluster love back into the wine of the Lord's love for us. And ultimately, he wants to raise a cup to the couple's lips, like at a wedding mass, so that they can taste again the best wine, which is Jesus. Let me make three quick comments about the Pope's penetrating examination of the Song of Songs. First, he notes that the overall structure is not simply an inspired poem, but more of a duet or a dialogue between a lover and the beloved. John Paul remarks, what was barely expressed in the second chapter of Genesis, verses 23 to 25, in just a few simple and essential words, is developed here in full dialogue, or rather in a duet, in which the bridegroom's words are interwoven with the bride's, and they complete each other. I will never forget that loving duet by Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton called Islands in the Stream. Remember it? They sang in sync. Islands in the stream, that is what we are. No one in between, how can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world, and we rely on each other, From one lover to another, Sorry. Now, Kenny and Dolly are clearly not inspired authors of Scripture. Nonetheless, they capture the same enchanting duet and dialogue of lovers. As such, their song gives us a glimpse into the enduring appeal of the Song of Songs. Secondly, John Paul calls our attention to the paradoxical titles that the bridegroom and the bride bestow on each other. The bridegroom says, "You have ravished my heart, my sister, my bride." And for her part, the bride replies, "Oh, that you were a brother to me, who nursed at my mother's breast." The Holy Father notes that by addressing the bride as his sister, the bridegroom expresses a disinterested tenderness that is filled with respect and reverence for the person of the bride. John Paul recognizes the result of this disinterested love. He says, from here, the perspective of seeing the bride in familial terms Consequently, arises the peace that the bride speaks of. You know, I had a professor in the seminary who suggested to us seminarians that whenever we feel lustful thoughts toward a beautiful woman, we should try to visualize her as a family member. How so? Well, if the woman were older, try to think of her as a mother. If she were the same age, try to see her as a sister. If she were younger, try to look at her as a daughter. Now I know where he got that idea. In other words, to gaze upon an attractive woman as a family member almost effectively extinguishes Cupid's flaming arrows of Eros. Purity, therefore, restores peace in relationships. And thirdly, the Pope Saint turns his attention to the highly suggestive metaphors of a garden closed and a fountain sealed. John Paul maintains that these restrictive images reveal that the depths of each person's personality, particularly the bride's, remains inviolable, in a sense, out of the reach of the bridegroom, until she willingly unlocks the gates to her heart. The Pope argues, the sister bride is for the man the master of her own mystery, as a garden closed and a fountain sealed. He goes on, the language of the body reread in the truth goes hand in hand with the discovery of the inner inviolability of the person. The most moving depiction I have ever seen of the inviolability of the human heart was in the movie Gandhi, starring Ben Kingsley. The great liberator of India called his countrymen to nonviolent resistance to British rule. He declared, all Indians must now be fingerprinted like criminals, but we will not submit to this rule. We will not strike a blow, but we will resist them. And through our pain, we will make them see their injustice, and it will hurt, as all fighting hurts. They may torture my body, break my bones, even kill me. Then they will have my dead body, not my obedience. Like citizens freely choose to obey government authority or not, so spouses freely choose to submit to one another out of love or not. Obedience and love reside infinitely above the ruthless reach of coercion. John Paul articulates how spouses entrust the hidden depths of their personalities by becoming a gift to each other. He says, the truth of the increasing closeness of the spouses through love develops in the subjective dimension of the heart, of affection and sentiment. He goes on, in the same dimension, this is equally the discovery within oneself of the gift of the other, in some sense of tasting him within oneself. That is, a fountain sealed remains intrinsically inviolable until the person makes a gift of himself, allowing the other person to taste the depths of their love. And then John Paul includes this concluding corollary. When the spousal gift of self has reached its maximum intensity and truth, when couples have given of themselves down to the last drop, they sort of take a step beyond Eros and reach the sublime heights of agape. That is, spouses move beyond the Old Testament world of the Song of Songs and wade into the New Testament world of St. Paul. John Paul writes contemplatively, It seems that love here opens up before us, I would say, in two perspectives, as though that in which human eros closes its own horizon were opened further through Paul's words in another horizon of love that speaks another language. The love that seems to emerge from another dimension of the person and which calls, invites to another communion. This love has been called agape. In other words, every human love ultimately leaves the spouses thirsting for more. That is not a criticism of human love, but an important acknowledgement that we are made for divine love, for communion with God Himself. As Christopher West once said, "Don't hang your hat on a hook that cannot bear its weight." And perhaps that is the most helpful insight for spousal spirituality. Human love, great as it is, betrays a fatal flaw. It has an expiration date. But we seek a love that is eternal. Every human married couple inevitably runs out of wine until they invite Jesus to their wedding feast and finally realize He is the best wine because He alone is the eternal bridegroom. Praised be Jesus Christ.